huge news, years in the making, my brand new book that my publishers refuse to publish, Money Matrix. Beat the money system and build generational wealth. Understand the three main ways that the banks productize you and make money from you. You'll be able to turn that system against itself, build generational wealth and multiple streams of recurring income. It's all at moneymatrix.cash. And if you're quick, the first few hundred registrants and buyers will receive many special bonuses from me. The brand new Moneymaker Summit 3-day special event. Meet me at a champagne reception. Meet me at a multi-millionaire networking dinner. Go now, moneymatrix.cash. This is huge.
How would you like to be remembered, your legacy?
One, I was a good player, batted pretty well.
Do you miss playing cricket?
No, it got to me at the end.
Really?
I just knew I just needed to hang up my boots. I'm controversial just purely based on the fact that I was playing at a time when I was saying the things and doing the things that the guys are doing now.
Why do you think there was so much resistance to what ultimately now is what you wanted?
Because I was a lone ranger. The regime at the time, they just ate me alive.
Welcome to the Disrupt the Show. I'm Rob Moore, and we have the very disruptive superstar cricket sensation and controversial Kevin Peterson on the show. Kevin reveals how he actually hated playing cricket for much of his career. He talked about the money side of the game and what he believes the players should earn. He discussed that how cricket is played now is all he ever asked for when the world was against him and he lost his captaincy and he was falling out with England. He talked about how social media is ruining us, and he opened up about the death of Shane Warne. There's a lot in this that I think you won't have heard before.
Kevin, would you say you're misunderstood?
I played in an era which was probably, for my wishes, the era that they're playing in these days. I think I had the rough end of the stick when everything that's happening now is everything that I wanted when I was playing. And so misunderstood is come about purely based on the fact that I had a different agenda to the agenda that English cricket had when I was playing. And what I've learnt is that the pen is mightier than the sword. And when you take the pen on, it's a bit of a problem. So that's all come about via my agenda to profile T20 cricket, profile Indian cricket, and go in an avenue while I was playing that was completely at a different direction to what the ECB wanted me to go in. So with that came issues. With that came, he's a troublemaker. And I think all the clever people now and everybody knows and understands that everything that I fought for, these guys have got. So I think if I was playing in the current era, under the current coaches, with the current players, in the current system, it would have been a whole different kettle of fish and you wouldn't even have asked me that question. It's amazing.
So can you explain what that difference is, just so everyone's clear? Do you mean the actual structure of the cricket?
Well, the difference is based on the fact that I was offered huge contracts to play T20 cricket at a time when I was the only one that was offered that. And so I was really pushing hard to play in all those T20 tournaments, especially in the IPL. And I thought that I deserved to be playing in those competitions. I was being bought for $1.5 million, $2 million back then, 12, 13, 14 years ago. So from that aspect, and also at that time, Indian cricket didn't see eye to eye with English cricket. So English cricket went down the Alan Stamford route, and we saw what happened with that whole debacle. I was captain of the England team, so I was having to profile that, wanting to profile that.
Did you sense something was up?
I didn't sense anything was up. It was just, I was captain of the team and I did what I was told to. Mm. But I knew that Indian cricket ran the world game. They do govern the world game. They do run the world game. And I absolutely love India. I love Indians. And I love that tournament so much. So I wanted to be that side. And so as England captain, when ECB is pushing you in this direction and they know I want to be in that side, we were going to clash and we did clash. And that's why there's all these things out there that the pen unfortunately had to write about.
Mm. So do you think you could have handled playing IPL 100, T20, 50 over and Test? Because in my mind, there's no doubt you'd have been in them all. As in?
Well, I was playing everything at the time. And I did. I retired from one-day international cricket. And they said, well, if you retire from one-day international, you're not allowed to play T20s.
Oh.
Whereas a guy like Ben Stokes 2 weeks ago, he retires from one days and they're like, great player, no problem, absolutely fine, go and have a break, play your T20s, earn your IPL money, play whatever you want to do, captain our test team. And so that's the difference now compared to me fighting a lone battle 12 years ago. But as time's gone by, there's been so much water under the bridge that people know, people understand. And I was just a lone shark out there being offered all these contracts and having to do it all by myself. And you're more powerful as a collective, you're more powerful as a unit. Mm. And there's more of them now in that space. And there's also not the Alan Stamford debacle in the Caribbean.
Mm. And how did that make you feel then, you being the lone wolf trying to push this all through?
Yeah, it was lonely, it was tough. But I knew that everything that I was doing is stuff that I wanted to do. And I knew that it was the right way to go. I did. I just knew it was the right way to go. When people say, "Gawky, man, the stress at the time, it must have been so stressful." I was like, yeah, it was stressful. But I knew that I wasn't doing anything that I shouldn't be doing in terms of what I wanted to do. And I knew what was right.
Mm.
I wasn't trying to go around and do things that weren't right and weren't going to make me a better player and make me wealthier. And gain experience in different spheres. I wasn't doing anything abnormal. I was doing everything that they're doing right now, but I was just ahead of the time.
Mm. And why do you think there was so much resistance to what ultimately now is what you wanted?
Because there was a power battle between the hierarchy at the ECB and the BCCI, and they were clashing. And T20 cricket was born and produced here in England, and India made it way better, way bigger, and paid players way more, and sort of took their little baby away from them.
Right. Mm. Do you miss playing cricket?
No.
No?
Not at all.
How come?
It was my job. I just live on a golf course and I love playing golf now. I like calling cricket, I like talking about cricket, I like watching cricket. But playing, no, it got to me at the end.
Really?
I just knew I just needed to hang up my boots. But not really the batting side, the fielding side, and just spending all those hours in team meetings and all the travel associated to it. I mean, as a commentator now, you can come in, like today I'm calling a game tonight, and I'll be there an hour before play, call the game and I'll leave. Whereas the players are probably in a team meeting now, discussing tactics, thinking about your form, thinking it's just like, no, turn up, call the game and go.
Yeah.
Way easier.
Wow. Was there a point when you had a huge passion for cricket and then was there something that turned it off?
No. Well, I think mental fatigue and just not wanting to practice anymore. My go-to and everything that I trusted was all training related and all practice specific. And when I got to an age of 37, 38 years of age and I just thought, practice today. I really don't want to go and practice today. When I decided optional practices were very optional, and I never used to go to practice, I decided no. Because what happens then is your form is good, and then it goes, and it just you never have consistency because you're not practicing enough. And I couldn't trust my training to be able to perform. And so I would have the most unbelievable innings, and then I'd be 0-3, 8-5, 10-2, 68 off 30 balls, 1-7-9, and that just wasn't me.
Yeah.
But that was because I couldn't trust my training.
Right.
And so I just decided, you know what, if you're not going to do this, it's not fair to your teammates, and I wasn't enjoying it, so I just decided that was it.
Mm. I'm a fan of cricket.
Mm.
I'm a fan of you.
Okay.
And I remember when you retired from One Day Internationals, I was gutted. Because I just thought, you're at your peak.
Mm.
What's going on? Was that a hard decision?
Not really. I was mentally busted. No. I was playing all forms of cricket. I was captain. I'd lost the captaincy. I was completely broken. The same as what Ben Stokes is now. I was just completely broken.
Do you think he's broken?
Mentally, you just need a break.
Yeah.
Just need to get away from the game. You cannot be on duty every day. I mean, all the off days are not off days because you're still wearing an England tracksuit or you're still in that pressure cooker, you're still having to make decisions. Having a series away, I requested on numerous occasions, just give me a break. Give me a break. Well, they never gave me a break. hardly ever gave me a break. I eventually said to them, I'm not going to play any warm-up games. I don't want to play any warm-up games. So they were a little bit better around that. But the regime at the time, they just ate me alive. And they ate me alive because they knew that I was playing the T20s in India. And they're like, well, if you want to go and earn your big money, you need to produce for England. And that's basically the stick that they kept hitting me with. Right. Whereas now, guys can go and have the big money, but they can take test matches off. They can, Johnny Bairstow just decided I'm not playing the 100 for a few days because I've got test matches to come. Mm. Ben Stokes says, I won't play one day international cricket. It's completely different now to what it was then.
And is there a cultural difference as well?
Not sure there's a cultural difference. I just think there's different understandings of players' needs. And I think that it's a little bit more, there's way more compassion for players' needs.
Yeah, and the money side of the game, we were talking about LIV Golf before we went live and how that's shaking things up. I actually think it's really interesting to watch, whatever you believe is right or wrong. The money side of the game in cricket, what do you think about the money side of the game?
It's there. The players should be earning way more. You see the broadcast deals that are flying around now. I think there's $5 or $6 billion dollars for the IPL that have just been sold. So I want the players to become as rich as they can become. They spend enough time away from home, their family, their friends, their kids. They must go and earn as much money as they can because they're the ones who are producing the shows. They're the ones that they're running the entertainment package, which is the shortest form of the game. And I mean, goodness, I'd love to see them earning football money.
Yeah,
I've had my time. I have no resentment. I loved doing what I did. I had the best time ever. It may have seemed on occasions that it was difficult, and it was difficult, but life is not perfect. Life is not simple. And I understand and I accept that, and I learned a hell of a lot about people, about myself. I sit at 42 years of age very comfortable.
Mm. People also forget that cricket might only be a 10 or 15 year career. And then what are you going to do after for the next 40 years? So in a way, top sports people like yourself, you kind of got to earn 50 years money in 15 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to completely clean up as much as you can, because at 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, I mean, your kids are at private school. You're living in a big house. You ain't getting that kind of money. Hopefully the guidance and the advice from the management structures and the financial advisors are sound, so that you do make smart investments and you look after yourself and you protect yourself and your family. But you're quite right. That's why I say these boys that are playing nowadays, they must go and clean up as much as they can clean up.
I'm really glad you don't mind talking about the money side, because a lot of people don't really like talking about the money side. And it's a very, I don't know if you've noticed the cultural difference from, say, somewhere like South Africa and England. You know, I was with Ronnie O'Sullivan 2 weeks ago talking about money. He just said, I'm embarrassed to talk about the money. I don't want to. A lot of people are struggling in the world. I don't want to talk about money. Is this a cultural thing in England that you've noticed? We don't like talking about money, or?
I don't like talking about money at all. I'm not going to go and talk about what I have and what I can have and what I have had. I think that there's a big difference between talking about money that is out there in the open with broadcast television deals, player contracts, auctions, drafts. I think that's a completely different kettle of fish. You see what's happening in golf, you know how much Dustin Johnson's getting, you know what Phil Mickelson got paid, you know how much money the Saudis are putting into it. I know how much the television deal is with the broadcast for Sky. I know how much the television deal is with the broadcast for Sony and Reliance in India. That's not talking about money in the horrible way of rubbing it up in people's faces. It's understanding that this is a business, this is the entertainment business, and it's work. That's what it is. So I'm not sitting here talking about being a flash Harry or all the stuff that I have that people don't have. It's a completely different conversation. We're talking about players, their wages, their salaries, and the broadcast deals, which are significant now. And I'm a big believer that the players should earn the majority of the sports those broadcast deal, because they're the ones who are producing.
Why don't they then?
I don't know the splits, actually. I don't know what the splits are. I got no idea what the splits are now. I knew what they were, but they've changed. Mm. They've changed significantly. I don't really go and ask somebody how much you're earning. I do know what the contracts are in the IPL, and some of them are significant, and they get paid really well, and I'm very happy for them. Mm. I was captaining England. I was just playing every form of the game, being given big IPL contracts. I didn't understand failure. I didn't understand home people homesick on tour. I shouldn't have been England captain because I just didn't understand the dynamics around all different aspects of life. And you need to experience the trough and you need to have life experiences.
I'm a big sports fan and I thought my favourite moment in sport ever was Liverpool winning the Champions League when we came from 3-0 down. And then when I was talking to Ronnie a few weeks ago, I thought, no, actually, my favourite sporting moment was Ronnie playing left-handed out of the blue. And then on the way down, I thought, actually, no, I think there's a better sporting moment for me. And it was when you did that switch hit for six. I have never seen anything like that in my life. How the fuck do you do something like that? Like, so outrageously different. I mean, everyone's switch hitting now, but I'd never seen a switch hit, let alone for six. I don't think I could have got it down to leg slip, let alone for six. How do you do something like that?
It's strange. I didn't find it awkward at all because I played a lot of squash when I was a kid.
Right.
With my parents and my brothers and stuff, I played so much squash. And I mean, I was playing, my mum always used to try and beat me. She used to serve it over my head into the back left corner. And I mean, I got real good at boasting the ball out of the back corner.
Mm.
And boast it into the front corner, try and make mum run, and then she'd drop it in the front corner, I'd have to get her back. And so, like, when I practiced squash, I just used to hit. I mean, last week, I was on holiday in the south of France, and there was this tennis court with one of those practice walls, and I stood there for about 20 minutes, and I just kept hitting backhanders. And I was telling my son, I was saying, Dylan, this is how I learned to play the switch hit. Look at that movement. And I just kept hitting bang, 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 bang. I said, that's the switch hit. The switch hit is all it is a left-handed down the line in squash or a left-handed down the line in tennis. It's just easy. Okay, clearly you've got to get your timing right to switch your body, but it's not a hard shot. It really is. I didn't find it a hard shot. I still don't find it a hard shot.
That amazes me.
No, but I practiced it. I
mean, yeah.
How much squash have you played? How much tennis have you played?
None.
There we go. So
yeah.
You're going to play squash and you're going to play squash for years.
Yeah.
You become very good at hitting off your backhand because how do you beat somebody? Hit to their weaker side, hit to their weakness. And I became very good at just whacking that ball and boasting it, also just trying to drop it in there, get mum or dad running across the court, my brothers. And I played hours and hours of squash. So that movement for me, that wristy flick, I can do it in my sleep.
Mm. So therefore, it wasn't a risk for you to play the shot.
No. I never got out to it.
Right.
Never got out to it.
Yeah. Wow. Would you say you're the most controversial cricketer England has ever had?
I think at the time controversial, just purely based on the fact that I was playing at a time when I was saying the things and doing the things that the guys are doing now. And it was topical. Ben Stokes is doing nothing different to what I did. Nothing. And he's applauded as this hero and the saviour of English Test cricket. And fabulous. But my point is there's nothing different happening now than what I did. But because I was a Lone Ranger and...
Disruptor.
Yeah, well, they said that I was that annoying alarm clock that went off too early for the ECB. Kept going off too early for the ECB. And I take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
And I'm just happy that these guys do what they do now. It's awesome.
And did it piss you off for a while and are you cool with it now?
It pissed me off when I finished after that Ashes series because I was batting. I had a knee injury, osteochondritis I had in my knee. So I didn't have the best Ashes series. That was my final Ashes series. I was still top stop scored and had the highest average and they got rid of me then. But I had 6 months off and I came back and I batted some of the best, 34, 35, 36. I mean, I could have got another 10, 15 test match hundreds comfortably.
I believe that. I was gutted when you didn't play for another few weeks.
And that's one of my biggest frustrations. But you know, I had that negative frustrated feel for all those years, that 34, 35, 36, when I was playing franchise cricket and just whacking it wherever I wanted to whack it. And just, I kept thinking to myself, I was watching international cricket thinking, oh man, I could have got 100, could have got 100, there's another 100, there's another 100, this is 100. So at that time, I was incredibly frustrated, but once I knew that I didn't want to practice anymore, it was amazing. Like, it was just like, everything just left me. And I just live in peace now and happiness.
On the golf course.
Well, on the golf course and with animals in Africa. And
yeah.
I live a very peaceful life.
Mm. Yeah, I want to talk about the animals in a moment because I know you're really passionate about it. Yeah. And business, because I'm passionate about business. Sure. I understand you are. What was it like growing up in South Africa? What was the experience there, and how is it different from coming over to the UK? And then was there kind of a bit of an adjustment you needed to make?
I'm growing up through my kids in England now and seeing the differences. No real big difference. South Africa is way more competitive. Way more competitive. Mm. School sport, way more competitive.
Do you see that as good or bad?
I think it's great. Mm. I can't stand some of the stuff I see here. Not competitive.
Right.
Participation. Oh. Rubbish.
Giving everyone a medal.
Yeah, rubbish. But it was just the weather. The weather's just the difference. That's it. Yeah. We're very lucky. The kids go to similar schools to what we went to in South Africa, with space, fields, and the ability to just roam free and feel like a free child. So I don't see that as too many differences. The education is great. Kids are lucky to be going to some fabulous school here.
Mm.
And being brought up in a beautiful, beautiful environment. I mean, living out here in the countryside is really special.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say, would you ever move back to South Africa? And within a second, it's absolutely not. No, we have a beautiful life here. And we're very lucky. And I know how privileged and lucky I am to have been able to make, take an opportunity and make it here.
Mm. I've watched, I think, every documentary that you've either been in or has been about you. I love watching documentaries. I'm an addict. And I just picked out a couple of things you said which really fascinated me. I never understood failure because I hadn't failed. I never understood families because I didn't have a family.
That was all related to captaining England.
Right.
And understanding people.
Mm.
Up until I captained England, everything I turned to touched to gold. When I batted, I was averaging 50, 60 in test match cricket, probably 70, 80 in one day cricket. I was captaining England. I was just playing every form of the game, being given big IPL contracts. And I was also, I just had a wife. I didn't have family, by meaning children.
Mm.
So what I couldn't understand is how people didn't think that this was just the best thing ever. I didn't understand failure. I didn't understand families, by meaning home people homesick on tour. And so that's why, two huge reasons why I shouldn't have been England captain.
Oh, wow.
Because I just didn't understand the dynamics around all different aspects of life. I think the more that I matured, had Dylan, became a father, became a parent, started to fail, the more I started to get homesick and on these long journeys, the more I started to, I think probably I would have been a better captain after I'd experienced all those things. Because up until 2008, when I got the captaincy, I literally scored as many runs as I could possibly score. And I think you need to experience the downward spiral, and you need to experience the trough. And you need to have life experiences to be a good leader of people.
Mm.
Because you need to be compassionate to other people's needs. And you need to understand people, and you need to realize that not everybody's the same, and everybody has different days at different times. And at that time, I was footloose, fancy free, and thinking everything's just hunky-dory.
Mm.
And so that's why I shouldn't have been England captain.
And how long after the captaincy did you come to that realization?
Once I had a kid.
Yeah.
Once I understood families. Once I went 18 months without a test match 100, lost the captaincy. I was in all sorts of strife.
Mm.
In my professional outfit, and so yeah, I I started to understand very, very quickly that there is a different side to life. It's great learning. Great learning.
So what would make now a great captain and a great leader?
Somebody who is compassionate, somebody who understands that you're only as good as your players. The performances are all player related. I just think it's important for a leader to get the best out of each individual, treat each individual differently, and understand that we're not all the same. And some people are going to be going real good, and some people are going to be going poorly. I think communication is key, communication is vital, and it's fundamental for the leader's growth and for the individual's growth they're playing underneath. But you're only as good as your team.
You are one of the most successful cricketers that England has ever had. And up until you, Graham Gooch was always my cricketing hero. I even modelled his backlift, opening the batting. So what does it take to be successful for so long on such a public stage?
Trust, practice. Prepare away from the bright lights, away from these things. Get away and go and train. I mean, I remember if I used to get out for less than 10 in a test match, less than 20 in a test match, I'd take my pads off, go to a treadmill, and I'd kill myself for 30 minutes on a treadmill. Absolutely destroy myself, have a shower, then go and watch the test match.
Wow.
So I used to punish myself for failing.
Really? If you got a corker of a ball and you could do nothing about it?
Punished.
Right.
Yeah, I used to punish myself.
Where does that come from, punishing yourself?
I just felt that I didn't deserve to just go and sit down and eat a sandwich or eat some cake and drink your coffee. Go and, you're supposed to work, you failed, go and sort yourself out, get back, and we go again. It's the reset. I just always used to reset. Even at the end of a test match, I asked my wife, I get back on a Monday evening after a test match, that next Tuesday morning, I'd wake up in the morning in London, off I'd go, bang, 10K run. Come back. I just used to run the streets of London flat out. I know Southwest London like the back of my hand. I just used to run that place flat out when we used to live in London.
Wow. Do you think people then, therefore, maybe saw you as having so much natural talent and didn't understand how hard you worked behind the scenes?
No, they do know. They do know. It's well documented, yeah.
Yeah, because to me, you do make cricket look easy, and I think greats do that.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to work ethic and understanding the basics, understanding your game and understanding your areas where as a batter you score and just becoming very good at it and also just keeping things simple. I always kept said to myself, you're not clever enough to think about 25 different things. Think of one thing. Option A, if option A doesn't work, you have to have a backup. A and B, job done.
Yeah. I'm told you've got some business interests and you're keen on business. Should we just sort of talk about that?
Sure.
What you love doing about business, what business interests you're in?
Quite a few. Food and beverage, I'm in real estate, the safari industry. There's a lot of stuff that I've got going on. It keeps me busy. Every single day it keeps me busy.
Is that important to stay busy?
It is important, yes. I do. I like staying busy. And then it's not a business, but it's an unbelievable hobby that demands a lot of my attention, and that's my golf swing.
Right.
And I say that because it just brings me back to what I've done my whole career, and that's practice, 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 practice. I mean, I'm in my golf kit now because I'm going straight onto the range after this to go and hit balls because I'm working on something specific at the moment that I'm not doing that I should have been doing. But that's the great thing about golf. The business side keeps me busy and I love that. I love learning. I love learning. I like asking questions and understanding things.
Would you call yourself an entrepreneur?
I don't know what the definition of an entrepreneur is. I don't think I've been successful enough in business to call myself an entrepreneur. I dabble my hand at a few things. We've been very, very lucky, and we've done some good stuff in real estate, good stuff in Africa, in the safari industry, but I don't know, what's an entrepreneur? I don't like these big words. I just live, I wake up this morning, I didn't set an alarm, sort out with the kids now, come up, do this podcast, go and hit golf balls, commentate this afternoon. What's an entrepreneur? What's a businessman?
Mm.
I don't know, make a few phone calls, send a few emails, make a few decisions, have a couple of meetings, travel,
yeah,
sit in the sunshine, play golf. The hell is an entrepreneur?
Don't know, but I want that life. So a lot of successful people have a super specific routine. Are you that guy or not that guy?
No, I don't have that routine. No, my routine changes.
And you like that, do you?
I don't like that. I like structure.
Ah.
I do like structure, but my routine definitely changes. Yeah, yeah. Mm. I mean, my life is now governed by my kids and governed by school holidays, and then also the number of days I year the number of days I do a year commentating.
Mm.
So I just put that in a box. I make sure that I fulfill that allocation, but then it's all done by my kids.
Mm. So I know you're really passionate about looking after the rhinos.
Yep.
And on your TikTok, there's animals that are hunting each other. So should we talk about that? Because that's something I think you're really interested in.
Yeah, I mean, animals, that's just nature's way of animals getting food. I pop to Waitrose and go and get some bran milk. That's us good. A leopard can't just pop to the local Waitrose. There's no local Waitrose. The local Waitrose is a squirrel or an impala. So I'm fascinated by wildlife. I'm fascinated by understanding animal behavior. I'm heavily involved in conservation and trying to protect biodiversity in Africa. We're losing a species, the rhino, right in front of our eyes. There's only about 2,500 rhino left in the wild in the Kruger National Park. And those numbers keep coming down because of the price on their horn. The rhino horn is fetching between $60,000 to $80,000 on the black market.
Wow.
More than cocaine, more than, I mean, anything. Rhino horn is the most valuable commodity on the black market. So it's used as a symbol of wealth in the East. And then it's also used for crazy medicinal use. I mean, rhino horn is keratin, it's your fingernail. I mean, that's rhino horn. So the crazy, ancient, mythical beliefs around it being an aphrodisiac or it being some sort of potion, a cure for cancer, is the biggest load of garbage. But that's what these guys think, and that's why these animals are being obliterated in front of our eyes. So we've got a lot of stuff. It's probably one of my greatest successes, actually, or not greatest successes because it's not solved, but it's one of the things that I'm most proud about is the work and the contribution that we have to protecting animals, to looking after people, and by educating kids. Those are three pillars that we stand by through my foundation. It's some of the most humbling work you can ever do, because we've just talked now for 20 minutes about sport and bright lights and fancy stuff and this and this. These are simple people that give of their life every single day to protect these animals. And I try and use what we've done talked about for the last 20 minutes for the benefit of these people and these kids and these animals. And that's like a huge, huge drive of mine. And I love it. There's just nothing better than trying to help people less fortunate and helping the voiceless, which are the animals.
Mm. Where did this passion come from? What got you into this?
I mean, I am South African, and in 2012 I flew back into Africa and went on this trip into the safari lands where we were monitoring rhino activity, where we were tagging rhinos because of what was happening to them. When I started to find out the aggressive nature in which these animals were being butchered and killed for their horn, it was at the time that I had that massive fallout with the ECB, so my profile was front, middle, back page of every paper. And I said to the guys out there, I said, how can I help? I said, crikey, this is, I mean, I love animals, I love safari, I love wildlife, I love Africa, what can I do? And they just said, well, at the moment, you probably just start talking about it. So I started talking about it. Now I do a lot of fundraising. I've got a brand called Sarai, which is a social enterprise, which donates a percentage of all our profits to conservation. So that's, I mean, I've got some fabulous partners and done some awesome collaborations within that space. But it's about raising awareness, about raising money. But yeah, the Legacy Experience Foundation is something that, I mean, I'm so proud of. We have the most amazing people who back us, and it's real work. Like, it's real work. We put thousands of kids through school every year. We protect and look after people's families and kids where rangers have been killed on duty. And then we use technology to try and protect animals in the evening. So there's so much stuff that I don't talk about, clearly talking about it now, but I hardly ever give too much information around the stuff that we do. Because I don't really do these interviews, to be honest.
Yeah. But it's nice to get the message out though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, it is. I mean, I use my social media channels to do it. I found that way easier, but yeah, it's proper work with proper real people. You know, I've read letters that have been written by kids to their dad saying, "Daddy, we don't know if you're coming home tonight. We love you." When they leave the gate in the morning to go and protect these animals, they go to school. Kids go to school. They don't know if they're going to see mum, and they don't know if they're going to see dad. And I've sat with these people, interviewed these people, have these people cry on my shoulder. Like, it's real stuff, and I think it's quite personal. But we have some tremendous backers. I mean, you can profile the Legacy Experience Foundation.
Is there like a website or somewhere?
That's the website, yeah. So yeah, it's proper work, and we are making some great inroads into helping people.
I'm glad we talked about it.
Yeah. No. Thank you.
What's the best advice you ever remember receiving?
Cricket specific, just watch that ball. Don't think about anything else. For 5 seconds, just bang on that ball. Silences everything, and it also gives me some sort of an indication as to what's about to be delivered. So I can start making decisions before the ball is bored.
Hey, quick one. Would you like to start a business, scale a business, create multiple streams of income, get better financial education and knowledge, build a personal brand, monetize social media, work from home, create a side hustle? If you'd like any of that, go join my members area rob.team. Costs you less than a large coffee, one third of the price of Netflix. You can cancel any time with no contract. Learn, earn, invest, build multiple streams of recurring income, digital assets, quicker, easier and cheaper, Zoom masterclasses, live event meetups, Ask Me Anything Lives, exclusive content that we can't put on YouTube because it's too controversial. It's all at rob.team for less than a large coffee. Go join now at rob.team.
Sorry to dampen the mood, but let's talk about Twitter now and social media.
Yeah.
Twitter is obviously a place where people can ding dong and have a bit of a rant with each other, and I think you've done that too. What are your thoughts on Twitter and using it to express your views?
I think it used to be a good platform. It's not a good platform anymore. I think it's just a cesspit of abuse. I use it for conservation, for broadcasting messages. I use it for fun. I also use it if I'm passionate about something and I want to get my message across around something. And it is a powerful tool. It's a very powerful tool, because I know that in the industry, a lot of brands, a lot of corporates, they draw great attention from the messaging that you can create. And I mean, I've got millions of followers. And when you have that ability to broadcast messages and drive something home, people take note on occasions. I think the tough part is discussions have gone, it's just abuse and name calling. I mean, you name call me on it, if I'm up to it, I'll take you on and just put you in your box. I don't go out there and name call people. I mean, I don't sit there and just start abusing you, write something or start abusing and call you a whatever, like a lot of people seem to do. But certainly if I'm in the mood, I'll put a few people to write, defend my position on certain things. But I mean, sometimes it is quite naughty. I will go and put just go and drop something out there. Actually, I think I did it this morning. I need to just have a quick look.
Oh, yeah, let's have a look.
I think I did. I was just reading the news this morning, and I saw something about Man United. It was quite funny, actually. I said, you see, this is already starting to fly now. A great saying, if you're going to play the game of cat and mouse, make sure you're not the mouse. Can someone in Manchester please tell Eric Ten Hag that he's the mouse in the standoff with the boss Cristiano? So that's now starting to get a little bit of traction. I find that amusing because people, especially in the football industry, I mean, oh, they're crazy, crazy.
Mm. So, what team do you support?
Chelsea.
Ah. Mm. Made a few acquisitions, haven't they?
Mm.
Think they'll do all right this year?
I see Aubameyang is now starting to be talked about.
Really?
Mm. That's news this morning.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Would love them to have signed Cristiano.
Yeah.
He runs the show.
Mm.
He's the boss.
Yeah.
That geezer runs the show.
Mm. Do you think social media has been overall good or overall bad for society, and overall good
bad.
Or overall... Oh, really?
Horrendous.
Wow.
If it stopped right now, the world would be a better place.
Wow.
Yep. Absolutely.
Mm.
And I say that for kids especially.
Yeah.
I mean, it's disgraceful that kids are allowed to operate on social media. I mean, we make mistakes as grown-ups and adults. We say things we shouldn't say. What kids are, the pressure that kids are under now. I mean, I used to go home from school and you don't see your kids, your mates until the next day unless they live next door to you. These kids are now in communication almost 24/7. I think it's atrocious. I mean, I keep it on there because I'm trying to keep up with what's happening in the world. I have... businesses and opportunities and the world of conservation that I profile. So from that standpoint, it's good. And I'm 42 years of age now, so I know what to look at and what to ignore and know what's rubbish and what's not. But the undeveloped brain of a child and a teenager thinking that they know absolutely everything, and they start you only have to look at these algorithms attached to social media, and you start watching something and the dwell time on a video will make you, I mean, it can take you to a place where you don't want to be. And these kids, I don't think need it. I don't think the world needs social media. Just don't think it needs it at all.
Do you think that'll ever change?
No. 5G, do we need 5G? What was wrong with 4G?
Yeah.
Said that. What was wrong with 4G?
Mm.
Someone needs to tell me what was wrong with 4G.
It's not going to be me.
someone clever needs to tell me what was wrong. Why do you need 5G? What's 5G doing that 4G can't do for us to live?
Mm.
Now they're talking 6G, 7G. I mean, shit, where's it going to stop? It's mental. Just give me a lodge in Africa, a fire, good education for my kids. Man, all this world is nuts.
Do you worry about the future of your kids?
Yep, big time. It's my greatest fear and my greatest worry.
Wow.
Mm.
And how are you trying to protect them?
Well, you try as hard as you can. I think it's about teaching your kids to be kind. Manners are free. To make sure that they live by a good work ethic, they love each other, and protect their family.
Mm.
There's not much more that you can. You hope that you bring them up in the right manner with around the right people and also educating them in the right way. And that's why Africa and safari and animals and conservation is something that I really drill into my kids, because I want them to understand how lucky they are, but also how much good they can do with how lucky they are.
Mm.
And they love it. They love spending time in Africa with those people, with the animals. So that's why it's so important for us.
Mm. Do Do you think we have freedom of speech now?
I mean, of course you do. You can say whatever you want.
Because a lot of people think we don't they?
I think you do. Mm. I can pick up my phone now and say that glass is red. It's not. Well, I think it is. There's freedom of speech.
Mm. And you've never been worried about maybe being cancelled or deplatformed or anything like that?
I think you've got to do something crazy to be cancelled or deplatformed. I don't live in a world where I want to be cancelled or want to be deplatformed. I've had all my nonsense. 10, 15 years ago, I had all my nonsense. I don't want to go back there.
Yeah.
I'm done with that.
Yeah.
I live in a very peaceful place. I get on my golf buggy now, come to see you. I'm going to go and hit balls. I'm going to go and see the kids. I might get my son to come up onto the range, hit balls with me.
Mm.
We're going to go and commentate the 100 today. I'm going to come home and I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to do a repeat tomorrow in a different part of the country. I live a very peaceful life.
Mm.
Next week, I'm getting on an airplane, going out into Africa, and I'm going to go live with animals and see people that I love dearly, and that's my life.
Mm.
No interest in being deplatformed or cancelled. No interest.
Mm. Do you think you needed to go through what you call your nonsense times to really appreciate and go into where you are now and your peace?
Yeah, I think so. Mm. I think everybody goes through that in life. I think everybody, and no one goes through life just thinking everything is hunky-dory. I call it the cycle of life. It's good, 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 bad, 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 horrendous, great, unbelievable, amazing, horrendous, great, brilliant. I call it the cycle of life.
Mm.
And I'm very happy on my journey. And I know it's not finished. And it's just a case of making sure that you just keep living by the simple things that we are lucky enough to be able to live by now.
Mm. We do a quick fire round on the Disruptors show where we ask the same 8 questions and normally get some fairly punchy answers. Up for it?
Yep.
Okay, so who's the most underrated player in cricket ever, do you think?
Wow, underrated in cricket? Jacques Callis.
Ah.
Underrated. I think he's the greatest player that's ever played the game. But when you talk to people, they all talk about a couple of other players way ahead of him, whereas he was just underrated. He also lived in South Africa, played for South Africa. The media is not very strong in South Africa, so your brand and your profiling isn't as global as if you play in England or you play in India, or even if you play in Australia. But Callis is the greatest.
I mean, his average was really high, wasn't it?
Superstar.
Mm.
Genius.
Mm. What's the biggest risk you've ever taken?
Moving to England. Leaving all my family, leaving all my friends. Leaving everything and giving it one real good shot at trying to make it in this country.
Wow. What's your biggest success?
Making it in this country, I think. Because my biggest risk was trying to make it. And I think my biggest success is being able to sit and talk to you or talk to the media and have everything that we've got because I took that risk. Mm. And I think that is success. I think so.
Would it have been easier for you to stay in South Africa?
No, it would have been way harder. I don't know what I would have been doing. The opportunities weren't there for me at the time. The opportunities were here, and that's why I will always be eternally grateful for the opportunities that England gave me and now giving my family.
Mm. What would you say to Shane Warne if he was still here, and how did his death impact you?
You see that smile straight away because he had that positive influence on people. Just a fun, loving, what a good guy. And it's just such a sad, sad loss. I can't believe it.
What's the best advice you ever remember receiving?
As a batter, cricket specific, just watch that ball. The back of the bowler's mark, watch that ball. Don't think about anything else. For 5 seconds, just bang on that ball. Then forget, repeat.
And is it watching the ball not just because you're watching the ball that you're hitting, but it silences all the other noise?
It silences everything, and it also gives me some sort of an indication as to what's about to be delivered.
Right.
So it just gives me that little bit of intel as to what's about to be delivered, so I can start making decisions before the bowl is bowled, It's before the bowlers bowled the ball. But yes, then distraction is out.
Mm. And what about the best life advice?
Be you. Don't try and be somebody else. Mm. Be you. Just be you. Be comfortable being you. Don't try and be somebody you're not. You'll be very unhappy.
Mm. What's the worst advice you ever remember receiving?
Yeah. Somebody said to me once, and we go back to coming over to England, they said, don't do it. You'll never make it. Just don't do it. It's a recipe for disaster. I obviously ignored that. Came here and have been able to be very fortunate in taking an opportunity that was there.
Mm. Are you motivated by proving people wrong? Do you like proving people wrong?
I used to.
Mm.
Yeah, I used to. Yeah, I did. I definitely used to. Now, like I say, I just live very peacefully and very comfortably, knowing that my practice worked, my training worked, and I was able to achieve things because I dedicated so much time away from the bright lights.
Mm. As a professional sports person, is it important to be loved by the fans?
You want to be loved by the fans, absolutely. I think it is important to be loved by the fans. I think it's important to have a good rapport with the fans. So, yes, absolutely.
Mm. What would you say is your biggest failure?
I mean, you have more bad days than you have good days in our job. Biggest failure... Wow, there's been so many. Maybe losing the England captaincy the way the England captaincy was, and that whole fallout with English cricket. It's taken a long time to sort of make peace and for everything to be okay. Yeah, so that's probably something that revisiting that with a maturer head. Maybe could have handled that way better.
Mm.
But at the time, it just makes sense because, I mean, I wasn't really pushing for anything else than what's happening now.
Mm.
So that's the frustrating thing. But yeah, I don't think that was handled well at all.
No.
And it's sad, but what to do?
Yeah. Well, what I did want to do is talk about all those things that you've already written in your autobiography.
Oh, yeah,
and, you know, all that. Yeah, exactly. But definitely go read Kevin's autobiography because it's all there. What's your biggest regret?
That I didn't play golf throughout my career. I started playing golf when I moved out into the country. And I'm just obsessed by it, and it actually made me a better player.
Wow.
Maybe a way better player. I was talking to Stuart Broad last night about it because he was part of the golf group that played. And they used to go away and go and play golf. And all these beautiful golf courses around the world. And I used to what are you doing? Why? Spend enough time on the field. What do you want to go and play golf for? It's such a rubbish sport. And now I am obsessed by the game. And I wish that I played all these golf courses. And I said to him last night in commentary that that was one of the things that I really... He says, do you think that you should have played more golf? I said, 100%. Way more.
And you think it made you a better cricketer?
Way better player. I hit more sixes and I hit the ball further and I hit the ball more consistently. So when I started playing golf. In T20 cricket and all that franchise stuff, I started hitting some monster sixes and hitting sixes at will because of a golf swing.
That's fascinating.
Yep.
My son played in the world under 5 and 6 championships.
Yeah.
And he'd never played any cricket. And he just starts smacking the ball.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at his shot thinking, that's your golf swing.
Absolutely.
And he's 100, hitting 100% it a mile.
Right. Yep, 100% right. 100%
wow.
Right. So my advice for anyone, or any cricketer, play golf.
Love
if you
it.
Want to whack it as a batter, play golf.
Mm. It's funny because when I was talking to Ronnie, his biggest regret was being a snooker player. Because he said, I'd have rather... been a Formula One racer instead and be as great as he is at Formula One.
I'd rather have been Tiger Woods offered $800 million by Liv last week.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
What do you think about that whole Liv thing? It's fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I just hope that there's a harmonious ending in some capacity very, very soon, that these players can just coexist.
Do you think it's good for golf to have a what you might call a rebel or disruptive tour?
I don't think there should be anyone who is cast aside because of playing in a event or in a series where they've decided that they want to go and play. I just hope that there is some sort of a conclusion very soon where they can all coexist and all work together. There's so much animosity, there's so much bullshit in the world. Everyone just fighting all day, every day. Like, hate it. Like, I absolutely hate it. Like, there's conflict. There's conflict in golf. There's conflict in cricket. There's conflict in business. There's conflicts in government. There's conflict in medicine. There's conflict just everywhere. Like, there's wars. It's not a good vibe. It's not healthy to have all this stress. And I mean, for golf's sake, a sport that I absolutely love, just stop the nonsense, man. Just be peaceful. Just the golfers, whatever. Just, it's not healthy.
Mm. Two more. How would you like to be remembered, your legacy?
Probably number one, I was a good player. I batted pretty well. And then secondly and most importantly, this journey that I'm on now around in the world of conservation, I think is one that's really important for me. So from a professional standpoint, I did as well as I could do every single time I put on an England shirt. Any team that I played for, every single time I got the opportunity to win a game for my team, or every time I put a shirt on, I tried to win that game for my team. That happened every single time I played. But this is the world of conservation now. I really want to try and make a big, big difference. Our first objective is to try and get positive rhino growth in the Kruger National Park in South Africa. So that's, we're working towards that goal, and we're trying to make that happen.
Mm. And then to finish, what would you say to Shane Warne if he was still here, and how did his death impact you?
I know. It's amazing. What would I say to him now? I wouldn't say anything to him now. Just be with Warne the way I was with Warne. You see a smile straight away because he had that positive influence on people. Just a fun, loving... He was flashing people in the autobahn, in the fast lane. That's how quick he lived his life. Get out the way, I'm on my way. And it's just such a sad, sad loss. I can't believe it. There's so many times, even since, and there'll be something I go, Warne, oh, can't do it. He's not here anymore. Sad loss for our game, sad loss for the world. What a good guy. What a good guy. Manners are free, Warne always used to say. Please, thank you. He got a bad rap on many an occasion, but if you knew him, he was a flipping good guy.
Mm. This show is called Disruptors. What does that word mean to you, disruptive?
Push boundaries, ask questions, and if you don't understand something, really try and find out the answer.
Mm. And where should people follow you? Where are you most active? Where they can follow your work?
Don't
get into an argument on Twitter.
Well, it depends on my mood. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, and then TikTok. TikTok seems to be pumping now. I don't even know what my name is on TikTok, actually.
I follow you on TikTok.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think it's just your name.
Is it? Yeah, Kevin Peterson.
Yeah.
That's it. So Kevin Peterson on TikTok, Kevin Peterson on Instagram, and then... on Twitter, it's KP24. Mm. Yeah, so, yeah, I'd probably say that's it. Yeah, that's it.
I really appreciate
you. Can't stand all the spam you get on the phone. I mean, there's a text message. Your Apple Pay has been discontinued by a by a mobile number that I'm supposed to go, okay, yeah, let me follow the link and go and give you all my money.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Again, that's why these freaking things here do my nothing.
Yeah. You know, on the websites, accept this, accept cookies, click this. Yeah. Yeah, it's mad.
So you asked that question about these things? Social media, man.
Would you even consider not having one?
No, I can't.
Right.
All my work, I can't.
Mm. Mm. I'm really grateful for you doing this.
No worries, man. Nice
thank
to,
you.
Nice to speak to you. Nice
yeah,
to
thanks
see
a
you.
Lot.
Thanks,
thank
buddy.
You.